Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, yesterday, Ed Dutton got in touch to say that he'd done some research. Now, that was all I needed to hear before inviting him on, because I've read some of his books, and whenever Ed does research, I kind of want to know what's going on. So I'm coming into this a bit blind, don't know what it's about. Hopefully it's not too spicy. But Ed, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I hope that you're enjoying the beginnings of summer. Yes. It's an interesting anomaly, and it's an anomaly that for some reason I can't seem to get the mainstream newspapers interested in. And it's with regard to our former Deputy Prime Minister and perhaps future Chancellor of the Exchequer, Angela Rayner.
Well, also possibly future Prime Minister. I mean, she is the favourite amongst the backbenchers at the moment.
Is that right? Well, yes. She said some interesting things about her childhood. She, according to her, she had an extremely dysfunctional and difficult childhood. In an interview, she said, "We weren't wanted. I didn't feel I'd ever been loved." She said that her mother was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Her mother tried to commit suicide when Angela was 13 by slashing her wrists, and Angela was her legal carer. And in an article in iNews in 2016, entitled "Labour MP Angela Rayner's Inspirational Mother," she said that her mother was one of 12 children, which is a lot of children.
Well so I mean, all of that, I mean, I would agree, but that sounds like a horrific upbringing.
Well, yeah, it doesn't sound very nice, but wonder if it's quite as unnice as there's an anomaly. She says that her mother is one of 12 children in an interview in iNews in 2016. Okay. In an interview in Spectator, Australia, in 2021, called "I'll Eat You Alive," she said that two of her siblings, her mother's siblings, were given away to Christian neighbours and never seen again. And that her mother left school at 12, couldn't read, and would just follow the fairground. So that's what she said. Her mother was one of 12 children, and two of those children, indeed, because they were so hard up, were given away to Christian neighbours and never seen again. That's what she said.
Well, hang on a minute. If two of her mother's siblings were given away to neighbours, how bloody big are these houses? Are these like landed estates? Because presumably you would see them every time you walked out your front door and they were coming home or something.
This is odd, but then she said other things that are odd as well, which no one's questioned, such as that the mother used to feed them dog food because she couldn't read and thought it was braising steak. Now, okay, I would have...
But hang on, surely then you go on the pictures and the picture has a dog
right,
in front.
Right. So that's a bit odd, isn't it?
Did she think that she was eating dog?
I don't know.
Right.
But no one questioned this, or that the interviewer didn't question this, or that she said things like, she had to go to her grandmother's once a week for a bath, implicitly because they couldn't afford to have a bath where she lived with her mum. But then she said, "I used to bathe my mother all the time." She used to have to bathe her mother because her mother was so depressed and couldn't do it for herself. It's very odd, some of the things she says, and nobody questions it, perhaps because she's a woman or perhaps because they don't want to seem like a snob. I don't know. But the weirdest thing was saying that she was one of 12. The mother was one of 12. Her mother was one of 12 siblings. And I thought, well, that's testable. Like, is that true? And I'm quite into genealogy, and I've traced my family tree and some of my family trees and various other people's family trees and things like this. And so I know where the records are and how you can check these things. And so I looked into it. And what I found was that her mother, Lynn Dean, was born in Stockport in 1960. The mother had an illegitimate child, Darren Dean, in 1975. In 1977, she married Martin Bowen, that's Angela's father, in Stockport. But for some reason, on the marriage certificate, she puts her name down as Ingram. Now, her mother hasn't married an Ingram. She's not Ingram. But apropos of nothing, she puts her surname on her marriage certificate as Ingram. This is weird. Now, yes. She has Angela in 1980 in Chester and Ellesmere Port, and she has a brother, Michael Joseph, in 1983 in Chester and Ellesmere Port. This Lynn Dean, I tracked down her mother. Her mother is Evelyn Dean, born Stockport 1941, marries a Brian, Evelyn Delves, sorry, 1941, marries a Brian Dean, 1959, Stockport, has Lynn, 1960, and a brother, Andrew, 1968. And that's it. So I can't find any evidence of what Angela said, that her mother had...
Well, that's not 12.
11 siblings.
Yes.
Her mother has one sibling, and that is this person called Andrew, born in 1968. Now, what might be going on? And remember that this woman, Lynn, got married at 17. So she's out of the house by 17. Did her mother remarry? Well, I find an Evelyn Dean who remarries in Halifax in 1971. So that's nowhere near. That's nowhere near Cheshire. But this is the one born in Bradford in 1954. I can't find any evidence of illegitimate children she might have had, because if she'd had illegitimate children after 1968, they would have been under the name Dean, or if she reverted to her maiden name, Delves, and which you didn't do in those days. Anyway, they're not. So then I tracked down, well, did the father, for some reason that makes no sense, come with a whole brood of children from a previous marriage?
Hmm.
Well, I looked into the Brian Deans you have in Stockport. One born and died in 1939. One who marries a Janet Brindley in 1970, but I've tracked them down. He was still alive in 2008, and so he's clearly the one that was born in 1947. And then you have another one born in 1932 and dies in 1988. And that seems to be Angela's grandmother, this Brian Dean. And it says on his death certificate that he was born in 1932, which makes sense then, so he gets married in 1959. So I don't know what's going on. Is it that she has 10 siblings whose births weren't registered? Is it that she has 10 siblings that were born abroad, which seems unlikely considering the poverty they were supposedly brought up in? Is it that Brian came with a series of illegitimate children that were all registered under his mother's, under the mother's surname? And if that's the case, then like he'd have to have started at about the age of 16 for there to be enough by the time he got married. So none of these things make any sense. It's a bizarre anomaly that I can't make head nor tail of. And I thought at first, oh, well, maybe there's a kind of weird blended nature to her family. But if you look into the records, that doesn't fit. So something's off.
Well, a simple explanation would be that she's lying. Yes.
I couldn't possibly comment, or that she was told this in good faith by her mother, and
during one of those baths,
perhaps.
Yes.
And she never thought to question it. But whatever is the case, the I don't want to accuse people of lying. We have certain libel laws in this country, but it doesn't. It's an anomaly that doesn't make sense, and I can't come up with a way of making it make sense. Because if they were illegitimate children, then I would find them in the records under the surname Dean, a mother's maiden name Delves, and I don't. If there were children and that were registered, they were illegitimate, but they were registered under the father's name, I would find mother's maiden name Dean. That I can't find any evidence of the. Other than that the mother was one of two. So it's very, very strange. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. I mean, in a prior era, you kind of expect journalists to perhaps ask a follow-on question to some of this stuff. But we kind of entered an era where the journalists basically just either reading out corporate press releases or accepting politicians entirely at their word.
Mm.
So, yes. We get this a lot from Labour politicians, don't we? We get the sort of Rachel Reeves who just makes up whole sections of her CV and then it is exposed sometime later. But it sounds like you might have exposed Angela Rayner's origin story is questionable.
There's other things. I would have thought this thing about eating dog food is just so obviously unlikely. It's so obviously improbable that anybody, even if they couldn't read, would think that dog food in the dog food section of a shop was anything other than dog food. And so it's most unlikely. And well, this idea
Yes. Yeah. And also, as somebody who has small children, even if you give them even if they like fish fingers and you give them fish fingers of a different type, you give them hake fish fingers as opposed to codfish fingers, which is the ones they like, they kick up an enormous stink. And yet she tells it in a way that on multiple occasions she was fed dog food and we're expected to believe that young children did not kick up a stink about this. When, you know, as anyone with small children knows, that is not how small children work.
No, precisely. They will react with disgust. I mean, I've just put in now just to check something. So between 1968 and 1978, there's a mother's maiden named Delves in Stockport. People with different names. Presumably, it would be a number of people with the same surname. It by any way of trying to come up with an explanation for this, other than the one you did, it just doesn't fit.
Well, I suppose there's the unregistered bit. So maybe. You know, she only registered the two children and all the other children she just had in her living room and just never got around to registering them. And they just, I something.
That's the only explanation I can think of. But if that's the case, then it's she's committed 10 different criminal offences. And those children don't have birth certificates. They don't legally exist. So I'm interested to know how they're getting along. It's just bizarre. Yeah. I mean, even to say that your mother is one of 12 is pretty unlikely. It's unlikely. If someone says they're one of 12, well, it's worth thinking about, are they? And so it's I just think it's an example of them giving her a different standard of what is exceptional to say. It's as though Angela is allowed to exaggerate things. Angela is allowed to tell fibs. She's allowed to exaggerate her, because if we question her narrative of being from a terrible, terrible, terrible background, then this is mean and unkind and we look unkind.
Is there some sort of psychological mechanism where you want to do performative? Because what you're kind of implying that she's doing, she's applying this performative, I am more common than you can possibly imagine type shtick. It's like you wouldn't believe how working class I am and how working class my origin are.
You wouldn't believe what a victim I am.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, but we have to be very... I want to get absolutely clear. I'm not saying this is true of Angela Rayner.
Yes.
Because you'd have to be a doctor and you'd have to see her.
But in general, there
are certain kinds of personality, such as vulnerable narcissism, or borderline personality, cluster B disorders that are associated with vulnerability signaling and with exaggerating the extent of your vulnerability in order to gain sympathy and control. And if you look at Michael Ashcroft's biography of her, which is called Red Queen, those that know her talk about her as being manipulative, talk about her as being haughty, talk about her as being temperamental, talk about her as being insecure. This thing that she said about not being loved is completely consistent with the kind of thing that these kinds of women will say. And so it's a means of supercharging a social bond with somebody else and making them care for you by signaling inaccurately or in an exaggerated form how vulnerable you are. Yes.
Now, I think you're right. We don't want to just talk about Angela. We're not talking about Angela here, but just ask you a question about, in general, women or individuals who seek out a victim narrative, who try and turbocharge victim narratives, who have bipolar personality disorder. In general, those kind of people, what would be the concerns about putting them in a position such as, I don't know, Chancellor or Prime Minister, something like that? Is there any sort of incompatibility with people aggressively seeking victimhood status and having a major office of state?
If they have, if that seeking victimhood is part of a broader pattern of a personality disorder, such as vulnerable narcissism or borderline personality, then in the case of borderline personality, these people will fear that will have a constant sense of emptiness and will act in a very insecure way accordingly. They will deeply fear abandonment and will act perhaps in an unwise way accordingly. They will have problems with emotional regulation. So that's obviously a very serious problem if you're in a position of power. Under severe stress, they can become paranoid and go into what's called borderline schizophrenia, where they think that everybody is out to get them. They can engage in acts of self-harm or self-sabotage, which if you are symbolizing the nation, you could maybe even engage in an act of self-sabotage in relation to the nation. They will have tremendous problems controlling anger. And so this, again, you can see is an issue. So they will be very, very difficult to work with. And in fact, there is a guy called, I'm just finishing a book about this at the moment, actually. I'm finishing a book at the moment about women with borderline personality in positions of power. Mm. And some people have argued that Margaret Thatcher reflects quite a few of these traits. Yeah. So she would surround herself with admiring, fawning men, which would, if whatever insecurity she might have had about herself, perhaps, you know, not feeling good enough or whatever, which is consistent with this disorder, then she would surround herself with quite unpleasant men a lot of the time that would direct her in difficult ways. Mm. She would deal with problems by becoming very black and white and very angry. She would treat opponents like Jeffrey Howe very, very badly. So it would cause you to sort of make mistakes. If you had that kind of, everybody speculates on Donald Trump having grandiose narcissistic personality disorder. Well, there are good things about that, i.e., that you are very confident, you ooze confidence, and so for people you make a kind of cold world feel warm again. You're likely to be very decisive. You're likely to take risks in a way that somebody else wouldn't and cut through the crap. There's all kinds of positive things about it, but there's negative things about it, such as if something really bad happens to you that sort of punctures your sense that you're superior, then you can reflect in narcissistic rage, in going absolutely crazy, in sabotaging things. And obviously,
such as the Straits of Hormuz, for example,
perhaps, yes. And you you can be very bad at taking advice because you're certain that you're correct, and so you might do unwise things. There certainly are a lot of studies that have come to the conclusion that people that are involved in politics are elevated in narcissistic traits because, in order, basically low agreeableness, because in order to rise to the top of politics, you've got to be a bit cutthroat. You've got to be a bit selfish. You've got to be highly confident, and so on. And that charismatic type politicians, as opposed to the bureaucratic, you know, John Major type ones, the charismatic type politicians are higher in those kinds of traits. So it seems to me perfectly real. And there was an analysis by a guy called Felix Post, which looked at very, very important political figures and found they were all elevated in various kinds of psychopathology, and particularly things like narcissistic personality. And so there's obviously good sides to having that disorder and being in a position of power, and there's bad sides to it. And the bad sides would be arrogance, entitlement, not caring about the detail, thinking you're above everything, thinking you can get away with things when you can't. All of those kinds of things that seem to bring down the charismatic type politician. And I think Thatcher, who we can talk about freely because she's dead, is a good example that someone like that probably was quite narcissistic anyway. She was very interested in fashion and what she looked like. That her two main interests were politics and fashion. She had a much older husband. That's consistent with borderline personality because women in general are sexually attracted to age because it gives them security and resources that it's associated with that. And so this is going to be turbocharged with a borderline who fears abandonment and wants to be looked after. She's, of course, going to be attracted to much older men. She didn't get on with, she had no, very few female friends and didn't get on with women. That's often a factor with borderline personality. They tend to have male friends because they burn their way through the village, in the words of my friend Dr. Hannah Spear. The women realize these people are out to get their men and are devious and manipulative, and they don't want to be their friends. And so, and they're anyway all about getting male attention and so on. So they don't.
So you're not suggesting that Margaret Thatcher was putting it about, are you?
Well, if you read, there's a book. What's the name of the book? I think it's called Incidental Feminist,
right?
Which presents a lot of evidence that she had at least one affair when she was an MP, even though she was married. A guy called Humphrey Atkins.
That would be
having an affair. Is another aspect, by the way, of borderline is impulsive risk taking, and you could argue that is not good in government. Impulsive risk taking, and one of the ways in which they'll take risks will be things like having affairs. With older men. There are definite positive sides to these kinds of people.
Yes.
Borderline personality is associated with being creative because you're experiencing feelings very intensely and you have a need to sort of it's associated with what's called identity disturbance. There's 9 traits and I find it very difficult to remember them all off the top of my head. I've now gone through all 9. Identity disturbance, which is that you feel so insecure and so unhappy that when something bad happens to you, rather than say, oh, well, a bad thing's happened and I'll make this change, you think, well, I'm fundamentally bad. I must change myself. So one of the markers of this condition is a dramatic change in identity. There's no evidence that Mrs. Thatcher underwent that, but you only have to have half of the traits to be diagnosed. But one of the things, so if a person has moved most obviously from being on the extreme left to being on the extreme right, or from being a leftist to being a trad Catholic or something, that would obviously be an example of identity disturbance. And having identity disturbance is probably not good if you're in a position of influence.
Well, I mean, all of those things that you listed, you know, dealing with stress and abandonment, I mean, that's not really the person you want dealing with the bond market, especially at a time like this. So, no, Ed, that is fascinating. Thank you very much for bringing us to that. Hopefully this is something that will start to get picked up. So you mentioned that you're sort of putting this out there on a number of outlets. So hopefully this worms its way back into somebody who's actually allowed into press conferences with Angela Rayner. And a few more questions, because if she's just making stuff up wholesale, it would kind of be good to know that she has this tendency to do it.
I put it to somebody that works for the Daily Mail, and he thought it was a brilliant idea. And he said, God, if it's true, it'll end her career. And he took it to the sub-editor, and the sub-editor said, no, I'm not interested.
Huh.
It's very strange.
Right. Okay. Yes, that's a kind of state of modern Britain. There was also something else I wanted to ask you about, Ed, because we got our lads in Makerfield this week, and so this recording is probably going to have to go out next week. But at the time of recording, it is the morning after the night before in Belfast. So 2 nights ago, from our perspective, a man was almost beheaded in Belfast. And last night, there were massive protests. But the protests were very different in Belfast to how they were in Southampton. In Southampton, the protesters were almost performing to the state. They sought out the police, they went to the police, and they protested in front of them. And they did all sorts of performative things, like taking the knee and saying, well, look, you knelt for George Floyd, why aren't you kneeling for us? But they were essentially seeking out the police. And the ones who did do things that got them in trouble, they walked around without masks, they got themselves filmed, they basically handed the state a prosecution file through and they did the evidence collection for them. In Belfast, it was very, very different. No live streaming was allowed. Press wasn't allowed near. They covered their faces. They left their phones at home. They did not seek out the police. What they did is they sought out where the police were not. They went straight to HMO and immigrant businesses, and they targeted them, you know, where whatever it was, a petrol bomb, rocks through the windows, and then they vanished again. It was very, very targeted, and it was clearly not a performance to the state. It was bypassing the state. Now, the reason I want to ask you about this is because you came on our general election stream at the time of the last general election when Starmer got into power. And you were the first person I heard made this point. I've heard other people make it since, but you were the first. You got it straight away. And you said this is the beginning of sectarian politics in Britain, because we'd just had something like 15 Gaza MPs elected, you know, member for Gaza Central, member for Gaza West, or whatever it was. But you had all these Gaza MPs. So you've obviously seen, and you saw something very early with the direction that this country is going in. And it just feels to me that Belfast last night was a prime example of how we are moving past the political and into the sectarian. I wondered if this is something you've been thinking about as well.
Yeah, I have been thinking about it today. I've been thinking that, and I wrote an article on it for my Substack, actually, of Jolly Heritage.
Okay.
I was thinking that in many ways, Northern Ireland is the worst place for a Sudanese person to attempt to behead, and frankly, he is probably blinded.
I believe he is, yeah.
This poor chap, Ogilvy, in North Belfast. And it's the worst place because, as you say, there's something, not that I am disparaging the British protesters in Southampton, and I'm sure there was raw emotion there and so on, and people were very angry, and it was appalling what happened. But what they were doing was protesting against the police and saying, look, this is unfair, there's two-tier policing, this is wrong. What the people in Northern Ireland were doing was so completely different. It was very much, this person is part of the community of foreigners. These foreigners are a problem in Belfast, and we will therefore drive them out. And that's a completely different way of seeing things, of what you're doing. What one group is doing is saying, okay, we accept foreigners are here, we just want them to be treated equally to us. Another group is, in a country where most people are still white, is saying, no, these foreigners have come, it's causing problems, they are to leave.
If you enjoyed that content, and of course you did because you are a smart person, then why don't you go over to lotuseaters.com, where you can watch the whole episode for as little as £5 a month, which really is not much money at all, and you get loads of really good content.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.